Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. It is a unique week in the sports world with the Masters now in November, so we are having a unique approach to the Behind the Bets podcast this week. We're banging out three of them, going to chop it up, golf today, then college football, and then NFL. So we'll break it up. Coming up on this program, we're going to have Wes Reynolds, like we do often with golf, and then also Jeff Sherman, head golf odds maker at the Westgate. We've had him in the past talk some NBA and I believe golf. I'm not 100% sure, but he's always been a great guest, and he will be coming up in a little bit. So we're going to talk the big headlines, right? Tiger Woods, Bryson DeChambeau, who's now the betting favorite, and then some other outrights they like, guys that have caught their eye, some among the favorites, some in the middle of the pack, like 30-1 or so, a couple bombers as well. And then matchups, really good matchup information sort of towards the end. So make sure everyone checks that out. And, you know, if you have to fast forward, you do, that's fine. But a lot of good information with the matchup for the tail end of this. So we kept this on the short side because, you know, there's just so much information. We can talk for hours and hours on the on golf and the particularly the Masters, but we wanted to kind of condense it and get the most bang for your listening buck, so to speak. Now, before we get into today's episode, I want to remind everyone of another ESPN podcast, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Stanford Steve Coughlin and Chris the Bear Felica put their unique spin on the world of playing the odds in college football, horse racing, and more. Of course, they'll have a Masters pod as well. Be sure to download and subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, as well as Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop. Hammer time.
All right, we break out the big guns when it's the Masters. So we have a separate podcast dedicated solely to the Masters, and in September, obviously. So a difference in the schedule. So we're bringing in Wes Reynolds, who we've had on the pod quite a bit, and also Jeff Sherman, odds maker, head golf odds maker over at the Westgate. Jeff's been on the pod before talking some NBA and golf. So, Jeff, good to have you back here, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Good to be back.
A lot's happened. You're a father now, you know? We don't forget about you.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been balancing between work and home, and she's growing up fast, so it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to that. And so we're going to bang this out a little different. Wes, good to have you on board. I guess my first question to you is, Wes, is what difference will the where we are in the calendar and how will it impact sort of your handicapping? How do you think the tournament plays?
Well, just kind of looking at the weather, because that's a natural thing that you would look to, being that this is now being played in November instead of April. The temperatures really are going to be about the same from what I've seen. But what we're getting this week and probably a little bit today and tomorrow, Wednesday, and then into Thursday, we are going to get some rain here. So you're going to get a little bit of a wind. So it's not going to be the same weather conditions that you would get in April, but it's not going to be as much of a pronounced difference as maybe we initially thought it was going to be. So It really doesn't change very much. I think the guys that are in form and the guys that you expect to contend here, most of them are probably going to play well. So I think because you've had this break where the last big event where you really had most of the participants was at Sherwood for the Zozo Championship, and that was 3 weeks ago. So some guys played in Houston last week, but usually that week before event is a tune-up event. It used to be Houston was before the Masters back when it was played in April. So that's not necessarily, I think, an indicator for Augusta success. So I think now that everybody's got some rounds under their belt and the fact that they've been playing big tournaments really all summer, guys should be in peak form coming in here that you would expect.
Jeff, what about you? I mean, are we going to see azaleas or is this like foliage throughout the course?
Well, like Wes mentioned, it's going to be wet conditions, so the course is going to play longer. So you look at the top of the odds board and these guys that are blasting away and starting with DeChambeau, and we all know what he's doing, but it's going to favor the longer hitter. And from some of the reports, I read McIlroy saying that some of the growth with the Bermuda around the greens. It's going to make chipping a little bit more difficult. And that's one reason why I'm actually fading DeChambeau in matchups, because we know about his length, but I think he's going to have some trouble around the greens. So we're going to see a little bit of different conditions, but the wet conditions will allow some of the longer hitters to thrive a little bit more.
Well, let's talk about Bryson DeChambeau, because he is the first Masters favorite, around 8-1, 9-1. You guys yesterday at the Westgate went from 10-1 to 9-1 yesterday. So he's the first Masters favorite to have never previously had a top 10 at the Masters since 2014, when Rory was a co-favorite at 10-1. Now, it's fascinating. It feels like it'll be a feast or famine situation. And so I guess, Jeff, you just don't trust his short game.
Yeah, I don't. And, you know, he's the only single digit favorite that we have here, only one in single digits, solely because he had a distance win in the U.S. Open. So everyone knows what he did there. They know what his game about, how you can bomb it here and be forgiving because there's no rough here. So everyone that's betting the Masters is zeroing in on Bryson. Every time I went 10-1, they would take that. They took some 9-1 today. So we're currently sitting at 8-1. And right now he's number one in ticket count, number one in money wager. We have liability on him. So, you know, everyone is just going to continue to get involved with him. But I look at it and the guys around him, John Rahm coming in solid form, Dustin Johnson last week finished second at the Houston Open after his COVID break. And even Rory McIlroy, who's trying to complete the career Grand Slam. If you look in matchups, those three individuals are each favored against DeChambeau in the matchups. And to me, that's more indicative of the true power rating if you look at it from a matchup perspective.
Yeah, that's the thing. You brought that up to me a long time ago with Tiger, right? Two-way betting. Think about it, all of our listeners, maybe some of the newer listeners or novice listeners. When there's only one betting option offered on a popular bet, most books aren't going to be offering true value if they keep getting bet into it. But if there's two-way betting, it's like, you know, last night, can you take the Patriots minus 13? No, I'll take the Jets plus 13. Oh, no, we're not offering that. We're just offering the Pats minus 13. So it's two-way betting is like a point spread where you get a fair line, and you're saying DeChambeau is a dog. Wes, I cut you off, but it sounds like you're not expecting him to win it this weekend either.
Yeah, I was just going to concur with what Jeff was saying, because he's absolutely right in terms of the matchups. And one of the things you also got to look at here, Bryson, when he won at Wingfoot, and I know a lot of people were cynical, and I was too. I wasn't really fading him, but I wasn't really interested in taking him either. He was 25-1 at Wingfoot to win the U.S. Open, and obviously what he did was impressive, but now he's the target for the first time in his career at a major. He's the guy that everybody is gunning for. And how are you going to handle that in terms of being that position and just reading everything on social media and all the hype around Bryson DeChambeau and how he's going to have pitching wedge on a par five? You would think that he's the only guy that's a long hitter. Even though he's the longest hitter on the tour, it's like he's not the only guy that can really bomb it, guys. I mean, there are other players that can do that. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, tons of these guys that are up there in the market. And now Bryson DeChambeau has to be the number one story here. And he is, even more so than Tiger Woods, who is the defending champion, who everybody always focuses on in the Masters in spite of his absolutely abysmal form coming in. But now Bryson's the guy. And how are you going to be able to handle that? And a lot of these other players have been in that position before and have had to handle that, where Rory's the target or Dustin Johnson's the target or Brooks Koepka. These guys have been there and done that before. Bryson DeChambeau has never been in that position. And what Jeff said in terms of around the greens is absolutely true. That's where I think this guy maybe could struggle. Yeah, he's going to have short shots into the green, but he's going to kind of have some offbeat yardages, if you will, on some of these pitch shots. And because he's so long, sometimes that could work against him. And I think at Augusta National, that's a course where it could work against you when you have these awkward numbers in terms of just little short pitch shots, and then how fast the greens are going to get, and they're going to get even faster over the weekend as the softness of the course is going to wear off. So I mean, that's where I'm concerned about him, because I think he could really struggle on the greens, and that's kind of what he's done in the past here at the Masters. So you got to take a stand sometimes against the favorite, and that's what I'm going to do this week against DeChambeau.
Well, I'm sitting here with 28-1 odds, and it's the only ticket I have in pocket right now. I bet it many, many months ago. So I hope you guys are wrong, but you guys are making a lot of sense. And that's the other thing is, with so many of the competitors know this course so well, right? It's not like a U.S. Open or PGA that rotates British Open too. It's the experience is rewarded. And that obviously we saw with Tiger Woods a year and change ago. Now, Tiger's at 35-1, the longest odds he's been ever entering the Masters as a professional. Previous was 15-1 in 2015, you know, off the back issues and everything. He was 65-1 in 1996 as a 20-year-old amateur. So little perspective there. But in just terms of following DeChambeau, Tiger's the only guy who's entered the Masters as a betting favorite and won the event. Before that, I mean, Tiger did it four times. And then before that was 1992, Fred Couples as a 5-1 favorite win. So Tiger obviously was more comfortable being the hunted, as you guys were just kind of alluding to, Wes. But now DeChambeau has to do that really for the first time. That's a great point about his odds at the U.S. Open being 25-1. Now, we haven't really had a ton of long shots. We've had some nice paydays. Last year, Tiger was 12-1. Before that, Patrick Reed was 40. Sergio was 30. Willett, 50. Spieth, 10. Bubba, 20. Adam Scott, 25-1. Bubba, again, 30-1. But Schwartzel in 2011 was 100-1. So I just think familiarity with this course is such an advantage. So I'm not expecting huge things from DeChambeau either, unless he just like the length and then he just does what he does and somehow is average enough around the greens. But I do want to move to Tiger because he's Tiger Woods. So Jeff, he's 35-1. Wes, I heard you on the radio recently. I'll ask you first. You think what would be his fair odds? About 60-1, did you say?
Probably in terms of true odds, I would say. Like fair odds, I would think would be around 50. Now, any bookmaker worth anything is obviously not going to put him at that price, especially knowing that you've got a Masters now with NFL action, with college football action in full swing. So the casual bettors that are going to be betting those games, well, now they're going to realize, oh, it's Masters week all of a sudden. So who are they going to want to bet? These are guys that maybe haven't been following the tour week in and week out. Well, they're going to want to bet on Tiger because they're wanting to watch him and root for him and the fact that he won here last year. So they're not paying attention as closely to the poor form that he is in. If you look at what he did last time out at Sherwood, I think he finished 72nd. Sherwood is a course that he's won at five times and finished second five other times. Now, most of those events were those World Challenge fields where there's only like 18 to 20 players, but still. Sherwood is as close to a home game course as you get for Tiger Woods. So he knows every nook and cranny of that joint and still played as poorly as he did. He just isn't in the form. Like last year at the Masters, people thought, oh, he came out of nowhere. He was in fairly solid form and had won that previous fall. So it wasn't like he was totally off the radar. But, you know, books are not going to offer him. And I think Jeff at the Westgate, I saw them have him as high as 40-1. And I think that's relatively fair because there's a lot of other books that had him in the 20s. So look, books are not going to want to get exposed here. And I mean, they're not going to give you as the better price on a guy if you're willing to take the worst price. So it's like, why would I give 50-1 when I know you'll bet him at 30-1? So why do I want to give you that extra 20 on the price? So I totally understand why Tiger's prices are compressed, and plus it is the Masters and it is Tiger Woods. If this was the Open Championship this week, you would have Tiger substantially higher in the market.
Well said. You painted it as accurate of a picture as I could have. I agreed with everything you said. So I guess the question is, do we fade Tiger? So he's got some Patrick Reed matchups, Reed minus $175, Jeff, and maybe we'll see some more matchups now that pairings were announced this morning. Do you see value in fading him at the current market?
Yeah, I did myself. I played Matthew Wolff against Tiger, laid $1.15 range on that one. I wouldn't be looking to lay $1.75 on against him with some of those guys that are in his range, but you can find some cheaper prices out there. Jason Day, I've seen $45.50, but I'm definitely not looking to be on Tiger for all the reasons that Wes mentioned. Plus, he didn't even play. I know he doesn't usually play the week before a major, but just the way that his game has been, he might need it to. And this is going to be, you know, one thing I've been saying is with the Masters placed in November, a lot of these guys would not be playing this week if it wasn't the Masters. This is going to be their last tournament of the year. There's only two more PGA stops left after this tournament, and then we get a break until we resume in Hawaii in January. So I think there's a lot of guys that are playing that are not in good form that otherwise wouldn't be playing, and Tiger's one of them.
Yeah, that's the concern with Tiger, but I guess don't you, Jeff, put some value in knowing the course?
Well, there is, and I put more stock in course form than I do at other courses when you're playing Augusta, but just the state of his game right now, you know, I'm sitting at 40-1, and just in relation, last year when he won, we lost in the six figures on him winning. So we're not averse to paying off on Tiger. And that's why I keep creeping his odds up, because he hasn't seen the betting support. He was 16-1 in May. Now he's 40-1. And you know, I'm close to going to 50-1 to keep trying to attract that support that hasn't been showing up on him.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, actually. And I think Wes brought up a good point. I mean, where we are in the calendar, it's kind of sneaking up on us. Football is still king. But do you, where are you in terms of just overall betting handle and then also your Tiger liability?
Well, we're about 75% of what we did last year. And some of that is to do with shelf life. And, you know, the one thing you look at, we usually put the Masters up right when the PGA Championship ends. So it's got an 8-month shelf life. This last year, we put it up right when the last match was concluded. So we were going to be looking at a 1-year shelf life, but then they changed the date in March. And it wasn't going to be played in April. So we actually had to refund that Masters pool since it was outside of our 8-day rule, put up a new Masters pool. So this Masters pool only has about a 6-month shelf life. So we're looking at the smallest shelf life booking a Masters that we've done in years. And that's lent itself to having a little bit less of a handle this season.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm actually pleasantly surprised. That's good. I think 75% is good for the reasons you mentioned. Like, you're going to have less duration. Also, we have a few more days to go. And your Tiger liability sounds like you want to juice the odds to get more action.
Yeah. And, you know, the replacement of Tiger, what everyone would bet Tiger over the years in these majors, that's what we're seeing out of DeChambeau this week. And like I mentioned, every time I went 10-1, they'd take it. He's down to 8-1. And he's the guy that the casual bettor is zeroing in on at this point, and not Tiger this week.
And when you said six-figure loss, is that net loss or just on Tiger, but you were able to minimize some of that with all the other tickets?
It was a six-figure loss in the outright market with Tiger winning.
And that means less, a net?
It was net. That's what we paid out.
Oh, gosh. Right. But that's not, because, and I'm just fascinated because, like, you know, you hear about, you know, let's say, what's a long shot that won? The St. Louis Blues, you had to pay out all this money, but they also cashed the 29 other tickets in the outright, right?
Right.
So, but is that including all the other tickets you cashed on Phil and everyone else?
Yes, it was including everyone. We ended up a net loss of that.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's just that I can only imagine those difficult conversations with the brass. Okay, so you look maybe not 175 with Reed, but some of the other prices you're looking to fade him with the other guys. And obviously, you know, just for example, for people relatively new to the betting, minus 175 translates to 64%. So, you know, that's tough percentage wise. Wes, any what are the outrights you do like?
In terms of the outrights, I've got a few in pocket. The guy that I picked before the year when I thought that this was going to play in April, and they asked us on VSiN, okay, who do you think is going to win the majors this year? The guy I pinpointed for the Masters is John Rahm. And I haven't really changed my mind here because, look, he's number two in the world. He's won twice this summer. I believe there's like five players that did that. DeChambeau 1-2, DJ 1-2, Morikawa obviously 1-2, as did Justin Thomas, and also John Rahm. Now, his win at the Memorial, I think, has a nice little correlation here, because if anybody knows the history of the Memorial Tournament in Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio, Jack Nicklaus designed that course with Augusta as the ultimate inspiration for that course. And if you watch the Memorial earlier this summer where we got a winner with Rahm, he absolutely dominated and probably should have won by more, but leaked a little oil late and got a penalty, where he was nudging that ball or on accident, and they eventually penalized him. So he only won by four. He should have won by about six or more, and just dominated that field over the weekend. And also at the BMW Championship, yeah, it's not a major, but it was some of the pretty much all the best in the world that were in that top 70 in the FedEx Cup. And he goes against DJ, who makes a birdie on 18 to take him to a playoff. And what does Rom do? He hits that double breaker 66 feet and drains it on the first playoff hole. So he's a proven player against the best in the world in big time events. Now, it hasn't been a major, but it's been other events. And this is a guy that I think his length is going to be enough. He's a really good scrambler, very good on fast greens. Last 2 years, he's been top 10 here, fourth and ninth. And also with the pairings that got released just before we started recording the podcast, who's he paired with for the first 2 days? That would be Bryson DeChambeau. So yeah. I think he's going to like that. He's going to be motivated by that. I think he's going to be like, okay, I'm against the guy that's getting all the buzz here. So I don't think that's going to throw him off. I think that's going to be even a little bit more of a spark under his butt here to really show out. And plus, he's the birthday boy this week. As of Tuesday, turned just 26 years old, 12 worldwide wins already. He's got the game here. And so Rom is a guy I did. And then I a last minute add too. And we talked about him briefly earlier. You know, it's a little chalky, but it's a chalky guy who's actually, as absurd as it sounds, might be under the radar. Rory McIlroy. No, like, it seems like nobody's really talking about him right now. Everybody's talking about Bryson. Everybody's talking about Tiger. Everybody's talking about DJ because he's number one in the world. People are talking about Koepka because he seems to be over the injury. And now we know the storyline, Brooks Koepka in the majors. And then there's Rory. If this was played in April and we had a normal 2020, he would have been the number one player in the world coming into the Masters with all the eyes on him and all the target on his back. He was going to be the number one guy in the world because he was number one in the world before COVID-19 hit. One of the things to keep in mind with Rory, this is the last jewel of the Grand Slam, of the career slam. This is the only major he hasn't won. So now he comes in with a little bit less of a target on his back, even though the price indicates that he's at near the top of the market. But I think he's in a better place now where he's not the guy that everybody's focusing on. And of course, a recent father as of a couple months ago. And I think when that got leaked out into the media over the week of the BMW Championship, they didn't really want that out. And it got out there and it kind of threw him off. But now that he's had some time away, it seems like he's starting to fine tune his game a little bit because he's the only guy really in the top 10 or dozen on the odds board that hasn't had a top five finish since the restart in June. But he was eighth at the U.S. Open, played fairly well there. I think he's kind of coming into form here. So those were the two shorter shots I played. And then as we go on here, I can talk about some of the longer guys.
Okay, so a couple of the chalk guys caught your eye. I don't know if I agree with all your reasoning. I think I love the golf reasoning, but you're like, it's his birthday. Well, that could also be a distraction, right? And DeChambeau, I like how you think it's a good positive. I'm excited because I like Rom. I've said for 2-3 years, he's going to win it. I mean, we all kind of agree to that at some point. The guy's got too much game and he's too young. I've bet on him a few majors. Obviously, haven't cashed that ticket yet. Jeff. In terms of your top guys or the lowest odds, any guys among the favorites you think are good value?
Well, if you can find those guys that, like Wes was mentioning, in the 12-1 range, it still exists somewhere out there somewhere, but I've seen it. And Rom McIlroy at 12-1. I've got him at 10-1 here. We've got a high ticket count on him, especially McIlroy, with alluding to what Wes was saying. With no spectators this year, and him going for the final one in the career Grand Slam, I think that could actually help him out, or he might not have that added pressure with all the spectators around. So those are two definitely at the top. And then I look a little bit deeper than that with I've been on Xander Schauffele for months now, and he comes close so much, but he's a great matchup bet. And he's a guy that I like. I played him at 22-1. He's 14-16-1 now. And Patrick Cantlay coming off his win at the Zozo Championship, he finally found some putting form there, which you need here. And you can still find him reasonably priced at 25-1.
What about
Cantlay? Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff.
Well, he's just as solid as these other guys are. And you look in the matchups, and he's not that large of a dog. And like I said, the one indication for me is if you look at the matchup market, you can put in relation to what these guys' true odds should be together. And if Cantley's not that large of a dog to these guys that are in the 12-14-1 range, and he's at 25-1, you could see what the real market thinks of him. And he's like that week in and week out. Here you have him up against Brooks Koepka, who's 16-1, Cantley's 25-1, and Cantley's favored in that matchup. So that tells you a little bit there. So his power rating from a sharp perspective is higher than what you see indicative in the outright market.
Okay, so you brought up a great point, and that obviously is telling. Now, my question to you is, we all know the NFL is the most pure, a closing number on Sunday is the most pure, like, betting market. Is the golf market that true, or is it just also skewed like the futures in terms of matchups?
The matchup market is true. What you'll see closing there is true indicative of a power rating. The outright market, like you mentioned, it's a one-way bet for most places, and you're going to find large fluctuations based on liabilities adding up from house to house. It's really not a true indicator of power ratings of these golfers. So if you look at the closing lines on the matchup market, even on Wednesday, the day preceding the tournaments, you can really get a strong indication and might be able to find some guys that are favored over guys that have shorter odds and support them that way.
And so just to brief our listeners, what happens in the future market is each book has their own sort of predetermined hold percentage. So if you get a lot of action on DeChambeau and you have to move them from 10-1 to 9-1, you, because of your approach and the mindset of the company, will have to juice others up as well to offset that decreased payout.
Yes, that's what we do, is we fluctuate it and try to, guys that we're not writing money on, we try to attract money on them. If we're writing money on someone else, their odds get lowered, we raise other ones. So we try to keep it a fluid market just to try to attract money all throughout the pool. I've got some golfers that I started out at 250, 300-1 that are now 1,000-1 because they might not have any tickets on them. So you see large fluctuations on this based on how the money's coming in this pool.
Okay. So that's, I just wanted to give some of our listeners a little background as to what happens, sort of the domino effect. And that's why you have guys who might be perceived as value, or why the matchup market is sort of used as a power rating, because you guys will get hit on them. I'm surprised Cantlay is favored over Koepka. I didn't realize that. Is that some of that because of the injury, or is that you just think he's a better player?
No, it's not because of the injury, because what Koepka showed, especially last week in Houston, he looks like he's past that.
Right.
It's just Koepka is not highly power rated in the matchup market. The sharp players fade him anytime he's in matchups, even in the majors. And we know that he, with his four major wins, he's done well. But when Koepka's on the in the matchup board, he is an automatic fade for the sharp players. And you tend to see him, even a large underdog to guys in his odds range, but then as a small underdog to guys that are higher odds than him.
Wes, what do you make of Koepka constantly getting faded?
Yeah, and I completely understand why, because he did show a tie for fifth at Houston last weekend, but that's only his second top five since last August. He did have that tie for runner-up in Memphis at the WGC FedEx St. Jude, and I know he's had some time off. He missed 9 weeks after the Wyndham Championship before he returned to Shadow Creek, but I can kind of understand why. I think he's treated more as an all or nothing player, because he once famously said, you know, that he just cares about the majors. So you'll see him get support in the outright, but maybe not so much in the matchups, because it's like, okay, if he's not in it, like, let's say he's maybe 15th or 20th or something in the field. If he's not in it, does he lose interest in the middle of the round? And that used to kind of always be the book on DJ, is that if he's not right there and competitive, that he kind of mentally gives in and just goes through the motion. So that's what I think a lot of people see in Koepka. And obviously there's fitness questions. He's only played two times now in his return. So that's why I think that there's a little bit of skepticism of Koepka. Like, I wouldn't necessarily be selling him here, but I wouldn't necessarily be buying him here either, because I just think that he needed to have a little bit more form going forward.
Okay, let's go to the next tier of outrights. Wes, sort of that middle of the pack, who stands out to you?
Yeah, I do want to give a quick endorsement, though. I won't explain it because Jeff certainly did, but Xander Schauffele, obligatory ticket. I always have on him in a major because he's just always right there. And I hear the laughter from Doug Kazarian as he knows that myself and our mutual buddy Matt Humans are big Xander Schauffele backers. And sometimes he leaves us wanting more. But I really give him a credit for a win this year because he did win the Tour Championship. Even though he didn't win the championship, he was the low man in terms of the 72-hole scores, but he didn't get any hardware for it. But moving past him in terms of the middle price range, I'm going to go with a guy that's never won a major and then a guy that's a proven guy here at Augusta. And here comes the cynicism for Mr. Kazarian. Tony Finau at 40-1. I thought that was a fair price, though. I mean, he's not in the 20s. He's in the 40s, and I thought it was a fair price on him, and I've always maintained when he breaks through, it's going to be at a big event. And you look at it, 4 top 5, 7 top 10s in his last 10 major appearances. He was right there in the mix last year. And if you look at his last 8 competitive rounds here at Augusta National, he has the best scoring average in the field. And I think going forward, what you're looking for with Finau is that he has all the tools. It's just tying them all together at the same time for 4 rounds, because oftentimes with him, you get a guy that he strikes the ball beautifully, but he can't make a putt, or he scrambles his you-know-what off, but he's always in tough positions and settling for pars instead of birdies because he hasn't hit it well off the tee or hasn't hit any fairways. But this is a guy that he's certainly long enough here, so he's out there with the big hitters of the game, and it's just tying it all together. So I did like him in the 40 range and also in a similar range. One of the things that when you look at the odds board this week, the top really dozen guys on the odds board, what do they all have in common besides being elite players in the game? None of them have ever won a green jacket. So none of these guys have ever won here. So that gives you value on some players that have had past success here and obviously drifts their prices up, aside from recent form and whatnot. So one guy took a 40 and one guy took a 50, are both former champions here. Bubba Watson at 40 and Adam Scott at 50. You look at Bubba, 2-time winner here, was 5th and 12th over the last 2 years. He's hit the ball beautifully of late if you've been following some of these recent events in strokes gained tee to green. He was 14th at the Northern Trust, 10th at the BMW, 6th in strokes gained tee to green at the U.S. Open. Led the field in the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek in that category, and was also 5th at the Zozo in Sherwood. So last 2 events, he was 4th at Sherwood and 7th at Shadow Creek. So look, no cut events, obviously, not like the Masters, but play. You know, the field was almost 80 players. The field here at Augusta is going to be 92, and then half of it you could pretty much cut off immediately. So this is a guy that I think, one of the edges that Bubba has here is there's always that, do you want to fade the ball off the tee or do you want to draw the ball off the tee? Because he is left-hander and he's such a shot shaper, he can take and hit it close to flag at awkward angles that most players cannot do. And he's just a guy that knows his way around the place, so I like Bubba's form. Adam Scott, meanwhile, is a guy that's not in great form. He has not been very active. I don't want to say post-pandemic because we're not in the post-pandemic, but you get the idea. Since the restart, yeah, he has not really played all that frequently. So he has been targeting. He's now just about to turn 40, and now he's in the stage of his game where it's majors and nothing else really matters. He's won enough of these other tournaments. He's got the one major with the green jacket in 2013, but I like him here. He's still got one of the sweetest swings in the game. Even though the form doesn't really stand out to you, he would be a guy that I think is certainly worth it at 50-1 because somebody that's going to have experience here I think is going to contend amidst all these young lions and young guns, and also made 10 straight cuts, their longest cut streak in the field. So even when he hasn't been in good form, he's played pretty well here. So Scotty was another guy I was looking at the mid shot. So my middle price guys would be Finau, Watson, and Scott. And I do also have a ticket on Wolf, just that I took a number thinking it was going to drop. It didn't really, because he was fourth and second in his two majors, really his first two major starts, fourth at the PGA, second at the US Open at Wingfoot. So I thought that number was going to drop. It really didn't. I don't necessarily love him here this week because, of course, we know the famous trend on the debutante. No first-time player at the Masters has won since Fuzzy Zeller in 1979. So I thought that the number was going to drop, and it didn't. But Wolf is not a guy I would play if I was betting this week, but I do have a ticket on him.
So, Jeff, if you're new to the program, it's a running joke. It's just like I laugh at Xander and Finau tickets just because I feel like they flirt with winning and they don't. I also have a little bone to pick with Finau. A few years ago when he rolled his ankle with the par three, I bet against him a lot of money in matchups and everything, and he crushed it. So I'm a little resentful. But, no, I think it's a running joke. Obviously, if they win, I wouldn't be shocked. They're really good players. But I just think it's funny that I don't joke that they're chasing, but it's hard to – you keep thinking the tournament you don't fire on these guys is the tournament they're going to finally break through. Where do you stand on sort of the close but no cigar, bridesmaid, whatever you want to say about Finau and Xander? Will they eventually get over the hump, or sometimes they're like Mickelson, or are they just sometimes just not going to get it done?
I think Xander will. Finau, you know, I would recommend being more involved in him with the matchups and maybe top five, top tens, pricing like that. Just because we've seen him, he's been flirting with wins this season since a restart, and he's done enough just to mess it up and not come away with the win when he really should have. And that just keeps me off him from betting him in the outright market. But I think in a matchup or a top 20 even market, you can get involved that way and have some leeway to work with. So I agree with you that Xander, he's gonna break through and win. He's got all the talent that these top guys have. It's a matter of time for him. And along the lines with what Wes was talking about in the range for these golfers that I'm looking for, Tyrrell Hatton is one guy that I played, and I could still recommend in the 30-1 range. I played him at 60-1, but he's been fantastic since the restarts happened. Consistent near the top. He doesn't have the best form at Augusta, but the way that he's coming in with all the confidence against the top golfers he's been up there with, I think he's going to prime for a good show this week.
Yeah, no, and going back to Finau and those guys, I definitely like encourage the top five, top ten, but it's just kind of more of a running joke than anything. So Hatton's sort of
I split on those, by the way.
Okay.
That's fair. With the outright. Because I always do that with Finau. Top 20, top 10 props is absolutely money. So I would recommend some of these middle price guys like a Finau. You know, if you're gonna bet on the outright, maybe don't go full boat. Split it up with props, and at least you can make money off the deal when he inevitably disappoints you in the end.
Okay, we're up against the clock a little bit. Any bombers, Jeff? Anything like a triple digits or anything like that?
Well, some of them that have been getting some support. You have like a Jason Kokrak who's been playing very well lately, and you can find him around 100-1. So you might want to get involved with someone like him, but. You know, as you mentioned, it's traditionally not someone that has long odds that comes away with the trophy here this week. And so I think the prime area to look, or if you're looking to move beyond the guys that are in the 10-1 range, is that 25-30-1 range and throw a little bit on a few of those guys. And they're definitely live the way they've been playing and what we've talked about. But it's difficult once you get down the odds board a little bit more. You know, Danny Willett. We've seen him win as a long shot. I had him when he was 150-1 when he won there, but now he's 300-1 dealing with some injuries to his wrist. So it's really difficult looking for those guys down the board, but 25, 30-1, even 40-1 range, you can find some really nice prices just because of the guys at the top, how short they're priced.
And I also think the odds market is sharper now than it was 5 years ago. So when you're saying stuff that hasn't happened in 10 years. I mean, those guys wouldn't be priced the same now if we went back in time and had all the data and the sort of aggregation of technology and being able to profile some of the sharp bets you take in and things like that. Before we let you go, any matchups? You mentioned that you have
Wolf against Tiger, and any others that stand out to you?
Well, I'm looking to fade some guys this week. Stenson, Gary Woodland, and Mickelson. Mm-hmm. Stenson and Woodland are dealing with some injuries. Stenson with his foot, Woodland with a torn labrum, and he's been battling through that. I don't think either of those guys would be playing the rest of the season if it wasn't for the Masters this week. And then when you look at Phil Mickelson, he's got two wins recently, but they were both on the Champions Tour. When he's been playing on the PGA Tour, his results have been very poor. So you can find some good golfers. I played Cameron Champ, who's a very long hitter that I think can do very well here against him at minus 135. So I really tried to zero in on fading some guys rather than going on some guys. And if you're looking more competitively at the top, I did play John Rahm minus 110 against Bryson DeChambeau.
Right, because you're fading DeChambeau in the matchups with the other big guns. What about you, Wes? Any? I know the pairings just got announced this morning, but matchups have been out for a while, even if they're not in the same pairing. What stands out to you?
Yeah, and Jeff mentioned a couple guys I would be looking to fade. Gary Woodland is absolutely a mess off the tee right now and had to withdraw a couple weeks ago and then finished near the bottom of the field, I believe, in the CJ Cup. So Woodland is a guy, Mickelson, another one who still can't hit fairways. Still is like now the Bryson DeChambeau of the PGA Tour champions, where he can just bomb and gouge and beat all these guys. But he'd be a guy I'd be looking to fade. Also, Mark Leishman, who really his form post when on the restart has been terrible. And Leishman is a guy that won here in 2020, won at the Farmers Insurance Open, holding off John Rahm against a really good field. So those would be guys I'd be looking to fade. The one long shot, Jeff mentioned Jason Kokrak. I actually have a 10-1 on him for a low debutant in the field. I think that's good value for a guy that's a big hitter that could be here as well. My only real long shot in this one, though, is Cameron Smith, the Aussie, who I got over 100-1, but he's now about 70 or 80-1 in the market. Peak form, fourth last time out at Sherwood, won his first event on the PGA Tour earlier this year at the Sony Open in Hawaii. So that's a guy that I think is a real sleeper that you could see getting on that first page of the leaderboard on Sunday and being like, who is this guy? Because there's always one that's in that category, and I think it could be Cameron Smith.
Okay, good stuff. So you guys gave me some guys to fade. And when you do this, Jeff, you do a first round matchup, fade kind of stuff, or do you do tournament or both? How do you approach that?
I play tournament matchups. I usually don't get involved in the round by round because it just anything can happen in those. If I do play round by round, it's mostly fourth round matchups where it's situational. But there's just so much variability in the round by round matchups. And when I play these, I want to get my guys evening out over the 4 days and get some longevity out of it and let the actual form come to fruition. So I really don't get involved too much in round by round.
Yeah, that's a classic case of, you know, small sample size versus four quarters. Like you play the first quarter versus four. You want a longer sample size, larger sample size to get a truer outcome, especially if you're fading a guy that you think or, you know, you just want the truer outcome if you trust your sort of handicap. Gentlemen, really good stuff. A little bit of a speed round, given a tournament we can talk about for days, but it's great to have it here. You know, a little different timing on the schedule, but really good information, really good opinions and insight. We appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks for having me on,
guys.
All right. Be well.
Sounds to me like you guys, a couple of bookies.
Okay. That does it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast, solely on golf. Like I mentioned, I wanted to get it out on Tuesday, give some people time to listen, process and then fire before Thursday's opening tee time. We will have college football on Wednesday, like we always do, and then NFL with Murray on Thursday. He's making a move. He's making a move by letting me lose in the baby bankroll bonanza. So we'll have to turn things around. But thanks to everyone for listening. Of course, thanks to Jeff Sherman and Wes Reynolds for their impeccable insight. And enjoy the Masters, everyone.